This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
This episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit is brought to you by Bluehost. Start your own blog or website in minutes for the very low price of just $6.95 per month. And Bluehost makes it really easy. One-click installation of your blog, it can't be easier. Your own .com domain name included in the price, and you never have to worry about bandwidth or storage space. You can find all the information on sqpn.com/Bluehost. And this episode is also sponsored by the Amazon store. If you click on the link on our website, thehobbit.sqpn.com, before you shop at Amazon, your purchase will help support our show. SQPN.com presents The Secrets of the Hobbit.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. Where to begin?
Hello and welcome back again to another episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit. Where have you been? I've read so many comments, and I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about me, or us, I should say, because there hasn't been a new episode for a couple of weeks. The reason was I was traveling China with my mom. My mom is born in China, so I'm a quarter Chinese, and for the first time ever, I went to China with my mom to travel the country in search of our roots and our family there. So that was amazing. But as you know, it's kind of hard sometimes to get on the internet in China, and Facebook and other social networks are unreachable. So I couldn't really keep up with the news, nor could I record a podcast. So finally, we're back. And of course, as you can imagine, we have a lot to catch up with, a lot of news. And joining me today to do that is not my regular co-host, Dave Kale, because he is busy with other things right now. He'll be back soon. But my co-host from The Secrets of Middle-earth and also the occasional co-host for this podcast, Inge Lotz. Welcome to the show, Inge.
Hello, Father.
It's good to have you. You're a little bit under the weather, I can hear.
Yeah, I feel a little bit like I'm getting the flu, but I'm kind of hoping.
Well, just procrastinate a little bit. Put it on your to-do list for right after this show. But I'm looking forward to going with you over the news. And of course, people, our listeners, know you from our very detailed analysis of the trailer and other production videos in the past. We are preparing to do that with the second trailer that was posted about a month ago when I was in China. So I didn't even know that there was a new trailer. I kind of suspected that there would be. But now that I've seen it, I am so eager to go over all the details with you, Inge. But we won't do that today. Today we're just going to catch up with all the other news. And then when you're recovered from the flu, we'll probably sit down and do a frame-by-frame analysis of this amazing trailer. But, of course, I still have to play it at the beginning of this show, because nothing puts you in the mood in a better way than this awesome trailer of The Hobbit.
Far to the east, over ranges and rivers, lies a single, solitary peak. The dwarves are determined to reclaim their homeland.
I like visitors as much as the next hobbit. But I do like to know them before they come visiting.
Mr. Baggins?
At your service.
I'm surrounded by dwarves. What are they doing here?
Oh, they're quite a merry gathering.
So, this is the Hobbit.
You asked me to find the 14th member of this company, and I have chosen Mr. Baggins.
Me? No.
Hobbits can pass unseen by most if they choose, which gives us a distinct advantage.
We will seize this chance to take back Erebor!
Here, Mr. Bilbo, where are you off to?
I'm going on an adventure!
Mithrandir, why the halfling?
Why Bilbo Baggins? Perhaps it is because I'm afraid. And it gives me courage.
So this is your purpose, to enter the mountain?
What of it?
There are some who would not deem it wise.
A dark power has found a way back into the world.
Why don't we have a game of riddles?
And if it loses, what then?
loses precious, then we eat it. If Baggins loses, we eat it whole.
Fair enough.
I will take each and every one of these dwarves over the mightiest army. Loyalty. Honor. A willing heart. I can ask no more than that.
Home is now behind you. The world is ahead.
That could have been worse.
You've got to be joking. So, Inge, first reactions, what did you think of this trailer?
I was like, I had mixed feelings because at one point I saw the bunny sled and I was already dreading the bunny sled and I was like, okay.
Oh, really? I loved it. I think with all the horror stories and the fans that were all up in arms about that bunny sled, I actually thought it looked fine. It looks actually pretty dynamic and not goofy at all. And I don't know, I was just blown away by this trailer and especially by the amount of new footage that was in it. Normally with a trailer like this, you get a rehash of the first teaser trailer and they'll just put in two or three little tidbits of new material. To me, it looked like this entire trailer was new material. And a lot of material.
Most of the stuff I saw in the trailer, I haven't seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like to get a sneak peek. But I'm still kind of having mixed feelings about the first there were two movies. Now there are three movies. And I'm still kind of like in the money grabbing, you know.
Oh, you think they're milking it.
Yeah. So I'm kind of very wary. I'm kind of afraid that it will be very different from the book, and I'm kind of a purist when it comes to the book. So
you're not the only fan that has some worries about the way that Peter Jackson treats this story, and especially the introduction of a third movie and adding all that extra material, and how balanced will these movies be? I'm honestly, and people know this, I'm on the other side of the argument. I think it's going to be fine. I think we can trust Peter Jackson. Yes, there will be some alterations to the story, but I don't think that they will be too over the top, and I don't think he will betray the story. Very pragmatically, the more we get to see of this wonderful Middle Earth, the better it is to me. And I was blown away by the quality of what we saw in the trailer. There have been previous showings of certain moments in the movie. Remember that 3D demonstration that was done in 48p, and a lot of people, or 48 frames per second, a lot of people were disappointed and said it looked fake and it didn't look filmic enough. Now that we see material that has been reworked and color graded and got the quality treatment in the Weta Studios, I'm blown away. This looks like one of the most beautiful movies that I've seen so far. It looks a lot better than the Lord of the Rings trilogy. A lot of the coloring. I remember there's this one shot of Bilbo running around in the Shire, and he is coming towards the camera, running in a little crevice in between two hills. I know exactly where that is because I visited the Hobbit set a couple of years ago, and they were working on that little alley that he walks into. And then in the background, you see the hill with all the little hobbit holes, and it looks fantastic. And the way that they color graded it, it almost looks like they use a technique called HDR, where you will first underexpose the image, and then they will overexpose it so that you can, so that everything is actually nicely colored and visible. Like, for instance, if you take a photo and you've got the sun in your picture, usually the foreground is very dark. Or if you overexpose the foreground, the background will be completely, you know, white and invisible. And this looked to me like a shot that would be impossible to make without additional effects, because the foreground is in the shadow, but it's very clear, and the background is in full sunlight, and yet you have all the colors, you've got all the detail. It's like little scenes like that that have convinced me that they did a terrific job on the visual aspect of this movie, and I don't think that we will be disappointed.
Isn't there a new trailer also in 3D?
Yes, it is. I read a couple of reports from people that watched it when they were going to see Judge Dredd. There's this new remake of Judge Dredd in 3D, and this trailer played in 3D in front of it. I also read some reports that there were actually five different versions of this trailer, and the only difference was in the joke at the end. So the version that I played was where the you see all the dwarves are stacked up, and there clearly has been a big fight or something, and then, well, that could have been worse. And then at that moment, there's this huge ogre giant, or whatever it is, like a giant, yeah, crashing down on them, and then you hear them like, "You got to be joking." Very, very funny. And apparently there are four other versions where there are jokes like that, but different jokes.
It almost looked like an outtake or something like that.
Yeah, well, I think it's another confirmation of something that we knew, but we tend to forget because of all the news about the epic scale of the way in which Peter Jackson tells this story. But he has confirmed right from the get-go, this would be a lighthearted movie, and this would be funny. There would be a lot of humor, much more humor than in Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. And I think that if, judging from the little humoristic beats that we've seen so far, I think they nailed it. And there's a lot of really good comedic timing in here. So I think we'll have a lot of fun while watching this.
Yeah, of course, Lord of the Rings, it's such a bleak story that it would be inappropriate to add humor in it, and there's also
True.
No humor in a book.
Well,
but
I always
wondered how they would pull it off, making a children's book as a prequel for a book or a trilogy that's written for adults.
Yeah, well,
and it should be the same world, and even Tolkien was working on it until till he died. So it's going to be very hard to make it feel like the same story, the same world, everything.
But when you see this trailer, I am immediately brought back to the way that the universe was depicted in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. I feel that there's a huge continuity. In a way, what we see in this trailer is a lot more cheerful and colorful and less menacing than what we saw in the Lord of the Rings. But you know, the fact that you've got all the same actors, you've got, you know, the same feel. The only thing that I was missing, and I only missed it when I rewatched it the second time, is like, where is the typical Howard Shore music? The music is very different. This is a track, I think that they just lifted this from another movie. I'll have to look into that. But it does sound like very different music than what we're used to. So, and it's a continuous music piece. Clearly, it could have been written specifically for the trailer. That happens as well. It works. It's very dramatic, but it's more like supporting, kind of like generic background music, and not specific Hobbit style, Tolkien style, Middle Earth style music like we know from the trilogy.
Yeah, maybe they are polishing off the score still.
They are certainly working on the score, and we've got a news item about that later on. But it could be that they're still working on it. But they could have used music from the existing trilogy. But I guess they wanted something lighthearted. And you got to be honest, in the current, the music that is out for The Lord of the Rings, a lot of the music is very dramatic. You don't have many cheerful themes, except for the Shire music, which we all know, but it's a little bit too well known.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's why they went with this, at least so far, unknown music. And if any of our listeners have an idea of what kind of music this was, let us know, because we'd love to know. So as promised, later on we will do a more detailed analysis of this trailer, because, well, I guess it's going to be one of those three-parter episodes where we set out to do like a one-hour analysis, and then after an hour we've only done 1 minute. But we'll see. We'll try to keep it at least as compact as possible.
Yeah, you can also see that they are definitely ramping up the PR.
Oh, yes.
When is it going to be in theaters? In a month or so? Month and a half?
It's at the end of November already, premiering in New Zealand. And then over the weeks after that, it's slowly, you know, being aired in the entire world. But yes, we're
all kinds less, of merchandise and everything.
Less than 2 months. Oh yeah, and most of the news that we're going to talk about today is part of that big PR push around the movie and around its merchandise. So let's take a look at the news.
Get out.
Confounded old Samwise Gamgee! Have you been eavesdropping?
I haven't dropped no eaves, sir, honest.
What did you hear? Speak!
Nothing important. Please, Mr. Gandalf, sir, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me in anything unnatural.
Well, the news, what have we heard? Of course, we have the difficult task of recapping about 6 weeks of news surrounding The Hobbit. But we're going to focus on the news that is really related to the first movie and to the story as such and to the movie production. We will skip all the fan news, and sometimes we talk about the merchandise, but we will only talk about the merchandise as far as it relates to the story of The Unexpected Journey. So, what's the first piece of news, Inge?
Well, there's a new poster, or several new posters, and there's one with, I think it's Bulk?
Yes.
On it?
Yeah, true. And at first, when this poster came out, people were like, well, who exactly is that? It's an orc, so it's called the Hobbit Collage Maxi Poster. it's available on Amazon. And if you zoom in, so you see all the dwarves and Bilbo in the right-hand corner and Gandalf. But then in the upper left corner is a very strange-looking character. To me, it looked it didn't really look like an orc. It looked more like one of those cat people from... Do you remember that video game franchise? That science fiction games with the cats?
What was it called?
It had Mark Hamill was a big voice actor in that series, and I guess most of our listeners weren't even born when those games were out. But wasn't it like Starfighter or something like that?
Yeah.
I don't remember. But it definitely looks more like a cat-like face. But I guess this orc, and I can't tell because this is a kind of a low quality.
It gets a little bit evoked by the headpiece he wears kind of armor.
I assume he's just wearing like an animal animal skull on his head or something like that. And then he seems to have, it first looked like a beard, but I think it's part of his mantle
shoulder,
or something like that.
Stuff, I think. It's kind of fur.
So, yeah, he does look a bit like a cat. Very different from anything we've seen so far.
It doesn't look like a goblin at all.
No, not at all. But in a way, I kind of like it, and perhaps we'll have to wait for a higher resolution version of this poster. I haven't seen one yet to determine whether this looks more like a cat or like an orc. But he was identified by many as being Bolg, the son of Azog. And so that's the first glimpse that we see of him, and he's going to be an important character. What I was wondering is...
Yeah, but in the first movie...
Yeah, will he be in the first movie?
Well, it's The Hobbit and Unexpected Journey. That's the first movie, right?
Yes. And so
he's on the poster, so he should be in the first movie.
That's what I thought, but then I was like, how? And at what point? And again, it's I think another indication that Peter Jackson will take his liberties when it comes to the perhaps not the chronological order as such, but he might insert characters that will have their official moment later on in the trilogy, and he's setting up the story, as it were.
Yeah. Of course, you have to explain the fact that 13 dwarves are coming to the Shire, to Bag's End, to visit Bilbo.
Yeah,
and that has to. You have to explain why they are doing that, and
yes,
why there's a party, and why Erebor is so important to them. So you need to start a movie, the first movie, with a little bit of the backstory of the dwarves.
Yes.
And you cannot tell the backstory of the dwarves without mentioning Azog and Bolg, because that's basically, that big goblin war.
Mm-hmm.
That's what shattered all the dwarves all across the world.
And
I think that's the point
you're right.
Where he will appear.
Yes.
I think.
And it could be in a flashback. It could also be in a, let's see what Bolg is doing right now, and then we'll get back to you later. It is also part of the way in which you have to tell this story in a movie version, especially now that we know that there are three movies. The first movie is always the movie with the exposition. I mean, if you think back of, let's say, other trilogies that we had. Well, let's take the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Sauron got defeated.
The story of the ring, and it situates everything in the entire Middle Earth chronology. It introduces you to all the characters, and so in the second movie, you can skip all that, and it becomes much more of a character development. And then the third movie is kind of the payoff of all of that in the conclusion. Yeah. And so I'm wondering if the decision to make a third movie has influenced the elements of the first movie. I kind of think that they already were done with the first movie, and so this might have been the plan all along to introduce Bolg and other story elements early in the story, even though in the book they appear much later or not at all. But I'm not opposed to it. It could also be that the way that they tell this story will include new elements that they made up, but I don't think it will invalidate the official story. I don't think it will mess up the official story too much.
Well, it jives with the production video we've discussed earlier. Remember that we were thinking what is this big dwarf battle we are looking at, and someone commented on that episode of the production video saying, well, that's Thorin with all black hair, and that's the battle of Azanulbizar. Mm-hmm. So maybe, and that's also where Azog got defeated. So maybe that's why where Bolg also appears. So that would make sense.
Well, and we know that Bolg initially thinks that his father is dead and has been killed, as you know, most Tolkien purists also think. But that there is a little bit of a twist in that Azog apparently is still alive, and so perhaps that's how they set it up. They will first show us the the distress of Bolg thinking that his father is dead. And then later on in the second or the third movie, they can reintroduce these characters and there can be this big revelation, or at least to Bolg, that, daddy is alive. And he's more dangerous than ever. So we'll see. I'm excited, though, that they introduce bad characters as well in this first movie and not just the good guys. That's kind of the downside of the original Hobbit story. It starts off very friendly, and then gradually the story gets darker. Here, I think they will probably have to balance it a little bit to make sure that the movie viewers understand that this is a dramatic story, and things are in the making, and you know, bad stuff is going on in the background.
And the story of the book, of course, is written for children.
Yes.
So you cannot make a children's movie and then have it as a prequel of a very dramatic, very adult-themed movie. So you need to, you need to change the script a bit to make it fit for adults as well. So
that's always been the project of this movie, is to expand the story using, of course, the background that Tolkien himself developed later on. Once he had written the Lord of the Rings trilogy, and to see if you can balance it and still tell the lighthearted story of Hobbit, or at least include the lightheartedness of the story, and at the same time give it more depth. And I think it's all a matter of pacing and balance. And I believe that if someone can pull it off, it's Peter Jackson, because he understands balance, he understands timing, comedic timing, and I think it will work. I just have a lot of confidence in what he's doing, and especially a lot of confidence in the great actors that he hired, because everything I've seen so far of these actors is amazing. One of these big actors, of course, is Benedict Cumberbatch, the hero of the Sherlock Holmes series of the BBC. He is going to play both the Necromancer and Smaug the Dragon, and he did an interview with Total Film Magazine about his role as Smaug the Dragon. And we've talked about this many times in previous episodes of this podcast. You know, will we see Smaug in the first movie? And we have to see a little bit of Smaug, but then again, you know, he's really at the end of the story. So why insert him in the first movie? Is that going to make sense? Is it not giving away too much? And I had a theory about the way in which the first Hobbit movie would end. And in the podcast Riddles in the Dark with Dave Cale and Corey Olson, the Hobbit professor, the Tolkien professor, the Hobbit. Well, I assume he's the Hobbit professor as well. I kind of suggested that the movie might end with a camera, you know, going from Lake Town to the mountain and then enter a little hole in the mountain and then go all the way to the cave with Smaug, and that the last thing we would see is the eye of Smaug opening. And, well, I think that theory has just been confirmed. Let me read what was written here. Cumberbatch, in this article in Total Film, was commenting on the techno magic of motion capture to play the Hobbit's deadly dragon Smaug, and he said, "It's very freeing once you put the suit on and the sensors. I've never felt less encumbered, actually, and you have to be. You have to be free. You have to lose your bleep on a carpeted floor in a place that looks a little bit like a mundane government building. It was just me as well, with four static cameras and all the sensors. And then the boys at Weta work their magic." So he's referring to this whole, you know, it's not a green screen setting, but we've seen, if you've seen the like extras on the current trilogy DVDs or Blu-rays, it's the way that they did the motion capture for Gollum, where the actor is in a dark suit and there's these little white, well, they look like ping pong balls all over his body, and that's what they capture. And so they use that on Benedict Cumberbatch for his performance as Smaug. And so you have to imagine there's a lot of acting involved because it's very difficult. You don't have anyone to play to. And apparently, and this is kind of interesting, Bilbo isn't here. It wasn't there either when he's performing like Smaug. And then the article continues, when asked if we'd actually get to see Cumberbatch's handiwork in part one, a.k.a. An Unexpected Journey, he said, here it is, "I think my eye will open at the end of the first film, and then you'll get the rest of me in the second." I was like, yes, I told you so. We're going to see the eye of the dragon. And there is another reason why I think that is exciting. It is because, in a way, Smaug is like the parallel to what Sauron is in The Lord of the Rings. In the Hobbit book, the dragon is the evil person. The necromancer, yes, we know that he's going to be big in The Lord of the Rings, but he is kind of a minor character in this story, and Smaug is the big evil entity that needs to be defeated. And we know that Sauron in the movies, in The Lord of the Rings movies, is depicted as this big fiery eye. And although, you know, that was kind of a movie thing, I mean, that's not in a book, at least not what he looks like. And then to have this dragon with this big eye, and I imagine that this eye is going to be very fiery as well, and it might actually evoke the eye of Sauron later on. It creates a nice parallel between these two stories, and I like that. I like parallels.
And of course, there are many dragon movies, and if you, for example, see the Disney one, then there's always, you see nothing. Mm-hmm. And then the hero stands somewhere and they see an eye opening behind him, next to him. So that's also very engraved in people's memory for cinema.
It's a trope. It's definitely something, a classic thing. I remember Pinocchio, one of the first big animated movies, where you have the whale. What's the name of the whale again? Monstro. Is it Monstro?
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden that huge eye opens, and it's just very impressive. And this could look just like that, but it's not a whale; it's a dragon. And then
makes sense that they catch cast it.
Yeah, that they cast Cumberbatch.
Yeah, Cumberbatch and how the one who plays Bilbo. Mm-hmm. I'm so bad with names.
Freeman.
But they also play together in Sherlock, right?
Yes, yeah. So, they do have a lot of chemistry.
Cumberbatch knows Bilbo, the actor, very well. Yeah. So I think that also helps with the acting, if you have to do it alone, because you
think so, yeah.
you know what the chemistry is like.
Even though this article or this interview seems to suggest that Martin Freeman wasn't present when they were doing the motion capture of Smaug. But anyway, Cumberbatch knows
Martin
Freeman works.
Say.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he can play on that. He can use his memory of the Sherlock Holmes series to interpret Smaug. But it's cool. I love these little tidbits in interviews. Now, there is another poster, Inge, that was published.
Well, actually, it's not a poster. It's a film cell.
Oh, okay. I thought it was a poster. But it's one of these merchandise things. But it does show us something new that we haven't seen.
It's kind of a glass print. Mm-hmm. So on a sheet of glass, and then you can put it in front of something, and then you can make a light box or something like that.
So what does it show?
It shows... all the members of the White Council.
Yes.
And you see parts of Rivendell, and I think you see also in the upper left corner, you see Elrond and Gandalf. And there's a kind of a crystal thing. And mm-hmm. I think that's an Erebor, because that's also something we see in the trailer.
Indeed, I was wondering about that. It's like they're standing behind this. It reminded me of the Palace of Superman, crystal mountain.
It was like a console in a game show, you know?
And the winner is answer three.
But it looks like a big, huge mountain crystal.
Yeah.
But so what's your theory about that? Where this is not in Rivendell.
No, I think it's an Erebor, because the second trailer we just played it has this discussion with Elrond and one of the dwarves, and I think Gandalf is also there, about I think it's when the company arrives in Rivendell, because there's this map, and Elrond examines that, and then it says, well, you need to look at it in full moonlight, because then what it reveals gets you can see it,
mm-hmm.
And I think this is at that location, but I don't really know what this chunk of crystal is exactly.
I don't know. There is something that Tolkien wrote, which is called The Quest of Erebor. And it explains how and why Gandalf arranged for the retaking of the Lonely Mountain, which is called Erebor in Sindarin.
Yeah.
And the Quest of Erebor was written in the 1950s to be part of The Lord of the Rings, but Tolkien decided not to include it. And only a very abridged version of the tale occurred in the appendices. So, yeah, that would be interesting if this is just one of these elements that they put back into the movie. It's like, this can't be in Rivendell, because we've never seen crystal stuff like that in...
No, my gut feeling says it must be in Erebor, mm-hmm. because at the upper right-hand corner of that cell, mm-hmm. we see something that's not dwarfish, and I think that's Lake Town.
Okay, interesting.
Behind Galadriel.
So Elrond would have come to the Lonely Mount. Well, yeah, perhaps.
I don't know. Recall him being in a book. In a Lonely Mountain.
Me neither, but
recall a kind of a dialogue in the trailer between, mm-hmm. I think it's Thorin, mm-hmm. and Elrond and Gandalf about this quest for the Lonely Mountain. So it's probably part of a story explaining why the dwarves decided at that moment in time to go after Smaug at Lonely Mountain, because... Yeah, it's not like, oh, let's go on a field trip. Let's go fight. That doesn't make sense. So you need to give a motive. And
well, and it's
the book. The book itself, The Hobbit, doesn't really give a motive. Just only that. Yeah, they are doing that. It's a given fact, and you get a little bit of hint of the background that they used to live there, and then they got defeated, and now they want to go back.
So could it be that this is actually something that a scene that chronologically takes place before the events of The Hobbit, that this is part of like an exposition of this is why Gandalf decided that, and so
that could be
explain why we don't recognize this conversation from the book. Anyway, that's going to be an interesting thing to talk about when we do our frame by frame analysis of the trailer, because it's definitely I'd like to do some more research on this quest of Erebor. And you're right, there that must be Lake Town on the right. And I think it's the first time that we see like the skyline of Lake Town.
Yeah, you see kind of the hall of the city hall of Lake Town in the foreground.
Yeah, the big bridge.
And there's something in the back, but you cannot see really what it is.
And we know that this is one of the major sets that they built, so that the Lake Town is not just a miniature. It's huge.
Yeah, which also indicates that the Lake Town is big in the first movie, and it's only appears past halfway in the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, well, it could be that...
It must be some story about Lake Town that was before Smaug...
Could be, yeah.
...entered, because there's also Dale. Mm-hmm. And there's the city of Dale is mentioned in the book, but there's a huge set we also saw it in the production videos. So I think it has to be... Yeah, part of the exposition or something.
Well, it could be one of the ways in which we are set up for the events later in the story, that we will first see Dale and Lake Town, and then we will get the backstory of Smaug. Although, again, there they can't really, if it's true what Cumberbatch says, then they won't show us what Smaug did. But it might be, I don't know, chronologically with flashbacks, you can do anything you want. They can show us what happened right after Smaug did what he did, and then...
Yeah, you can, of course, show what he does without showing the monster. That makes it extra scary.
That's another way in which... That's another thing they could do. What I like about the White Council poster is, or film cell, is also the photo on the bottom side of this, which shows the four members of the White Council at a round table. And in the background is a beautiful forest and a little stream. This could be straight from, you know, Lord of the Rings Online. There are lots of areas there that remind me of this. And again, I was wondering, is this in Rivendell? Is this elsewhere?
Yeah, this is in Rivendell.
It does look like Rivendell with all the elvish architecture in the back. At the same time, it looks a bit run down. And so there's some dead plants on the pillars and... So perhaps this is an area of Rivendell that's not cleaned up all the time because they don't have their meetings every week.
They couldn't pay the gardener anymore.
I guess so. It looks beautiful. It looks extremely... I've never seen this set before, or perhaps just small pieces of it, but it looks like it's been there forever.
It was part of the production last production video.
Yeah, I do remember a few of those elements. But
that
not,
was, of course, in front of a screen.
A green screen.
Green screen.
Yes, yes.
I see lots of ivy. So, yeah.
I love
lots of intricate stonework.
It's cool to see that even though this is called the White Council, only one person is white. It is dressed in white. It's Galadriel.
Two persons.
Well, Saruman is already, you know, it's not entirely white. He's already tainted. It's a bit like IKEA white. It's like off white. Yeah, there are lots of furniture right now has exactly that same color, and it's sold as being white, but it's not. It's more brownish white. And then on the left, Elrond is totally black, and it's funny that Elrond, of course, has to look a bit younger than he looks in the trilogy. Although for an elf, that probably doesn't make so much of a difference. But his hair is really dark black. And there's another picture that I saw on one of the toys where he definitely looks more like combative and strong and younger than in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. So I don't think
elves age like that. But yeah, you could
see that. Well, I don't know. But they definitely do want to convey that he's a younger version. So I guess there's a lot of makeup and Botox involved because the actor, of course, is not an elf. And then Gandalf's just sitting there on the left looking his gray old self.
I thought that Radagast was also part of the White Council. So there's some other elves.
Yeah.
Curdan, the shipwright, maybe. Wow. So there were some older elves and the oldest elves.
Mm-hmm.
Would be in a White Council, so I'm missing a couple of people, but
maybe
for the sake of the story.
Of simplicity, or they might have just like meetings where some people are using Skype to follow the discussion or something. I don't know. Yeah. But no.
Volunteer.
These are the four major characters as far as this story is concerned, because of course Saruman is playing his double game, and that's going to be cool because we already know that he's evil. It's just like the Emperor in Star Wars, you know, where in the prequels you already know that Palpatine is going to be the Emperor. And so you already know that he's evil, but
I don't know about that. Maybe my theory is that he may be not evil right now, but he may have this desire. Perhaps. But once he, after the Battle of Bol Guldur, he may have realized that Sauron is very powerful, and that if he wants to fulfill his desires, that he may be change side. And
that's an interesting idea. I love that. Perhaps we will see him turn towards Sauron or towards the Necromancer over time. That would be actually very cool to have some character development instead of Saruman being, oh yeah, that's just a bad guy.
Yeah, because he's always trusted by Gandalf and he's part of the White Council.
Yep.
And if he was evil all along, he would never have been on the White Council.
Well, but I do
so
think
there has to be a point of turn.
From Tolkien, we do know that he was already manipulating in the White Council. He was already using Radagast the Brown, for instance, for certain purposes. But it would be interesting to see if in the beginning, when we first meet him, he might be just still like a little bit bad and a little bit good. And so I'd love to see this duplicity in his
character. Maybe
his character.
What I think is just kind of he had already this weakness because he wanted to be the head of the Order, and he wanted to the head of the White Council at very high goals.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point when perhaps during the Battle of Bol Guldur, he just realized that the rest of the council was not going his way. So he wanted to pick another ally to reach his goal. And he may have thought that he could also manipulate Sauron, for example.
Could be a little bit of a, now that I think of it, almost like a Judas story where, you know, Judas is one of the apostles, like Jesus' White Council in a way. And then, but his, even though he seems to have the same goals, his ultimate expectation of where things should go is very different. And so that's why he falls and betrays the rest.
Yeah.
And in a way, Saruman is a bit of a Judas archetype as well, because he betrays the White Council, he betrays his friends. And
he betrays Middle Earth.
But he thinks he's accomplishing his goals with that, and so it's always this perception of what is good for the world, what is good for me. But is that also good for the rest?
He thinks he's kind of more advanced, and he has better insights, and he's also the person who believes in kind of mechanics. You know, if you see in the three movies, you see when you get it his way, you get kind of an industrial revolution, and everything you get kind of machines and everything and scientific stuff. So you can also already see that Tolkien was a kind of opposed to everything modern, and he was convinced that modern developments were not necessarily good for the people.
Well, and
he really had this ideal of the Middle Ages. So you can see the play also a bit in this.
That's one aspect of it. I think another aspect is that this whole, you know, trust in technology and economic change also could be an expression of pride. It's like we want to manipulate, we want to be in control, and Saruman thinks that he can save Middle Earth by getting control over anything, and that's why he wants Sauron's power. So he thinks he can wield it, just like the temptation of the ring is that to use the ring for good. I just played the first part of the there's a new expansion for Lord of the Rings Online, and at the beginning of the epic quest you are actually playing Frodo at the moment that he needs to decide what to do with the ring, and then you've got the encounter with Boromir, which goes awry. And Boromir, in a way, makes the same mistake. He thinks that he can have the ring, yield the power of the ring, and use it for good. And so it's this temptation of, as long as I'm in control and I have all the power, I will do good. Whereas I think the ultimate, you know, one of the big things that Tolkien wants to convey with this story is you can only win if you're ready to lose. If you're willing to sacrifice your life and become powerless instead of powerful. And in a way, Saruman is just like Boromir. He wants to be in control. He wants to grab the power. And he might think, from his perspective, that it's power for the good of, for the benefit of Middle-earth. But he doesn't realize how much he's being corrupted by that power. And, exactly. And in a way, yeah, The Hobbit tells that same story on a smaller scale. It's like Bilbo is saving the day because he knows how small he is. And it's by his wits and by his character that he wins, and not by being all-powerful and mighty.
Yeah, that's why I like the story so much, because in that time and age, it was always black and white. Just you had the bad guys versus the good guys. And in Tolkien's world, evil people are never evil, but they become evil because they do something stupid, because it seemed to be a good idea at the time, and then things get out of hand, and then they end up at a place where they don't want to be, or... So, or they just get corrupted. People never start with I just want to be evil, and now I'm going to do all kind of stuff to get the most evil person in Middle Earth.
And I think that's true. I mean, that's the way it works with humans. No one wants to be super evil. There's no one who gets born and is like, oh, I'm going to be the most evil person in the world. No, you always think that you're doing something good, even if it's sometimes in a very egotistical perception of what is good. But no one acts out of pure evil. You always act and choose what you think is good. But that the problem is that oftentimes, you know, people don't listen to other people or don't realize that something that might be good for you is not good for others. And that's kind of what the White Council, of course, is supposed to guard. They are the protectors of the common good. And that's why it's such a broad range of people, and that's why Gandalf is there. It's part of his job, and Galadriel is there. They have to see the bigger scope and the bigger picture, and in a way go beyond the immediate needs of Middle-earth right now. And that's the elves, in a way, just by the fact that they are so old. That automatically gives you this wisdom and this broader picture of, you know, the being able to separate the current events and the current needs from, you know, but what is good in general for the entire world in which we live and for all the creatures that live in there. All right, let's move on to the Hobbit sets, because who would have thought that the Lego Hobbit sets would reveal major spoilers of the Hobbit movies, but also would be the cause of a huge controversy about something that apparently Peter Jackson has changed. The Hobbit sets, the Lego Hobbit sets are long anticipated. We know that there is a whole Lord of the Rings line out there, and Lego is also bringing games in the market, and all based on Lego. And so there are, I think, 4 or 5 sets that are now out, and you can find photos everywhere on the internet. The one set is called Riddles of the Ring, and it shows the cave sequence and Gollum and the Lego version of Bilbo. The cave itself looks relatively small, although you always have to be careful with this. You can never judge from just a Lego set how big it will look in the actual movie. But the Riddles for the Ring set has a boat. So I assume that is Gollum's boat. I don't remember a boat from the book. But
yeah, there's a boat in the book.
Oh, there's a boat. Okay, so that's Gollum's boat. And then Gollum himself is holding a fish. And Bilbo has a sword, Sting. And then he's got the ring in his left hand, as far as I can tell. By the way, that was what I thought was a genius element of the trailer, where you see this ring and it turns into the O of the Hobbit.
Yes.
I love that. That's such a great way to tie these movies together. The second Lego set is much, much bigger. And it is, and this is also the one where the controversy starts. It is called Escape from Mirkwood Spiders, and it's a very elaborate set. It's clearly some kind of goblin construction in the background, but the controversy is about the fact that this scene with the spiders. Oh, wait a minute. No, I'm mistaken. The one that I was describing was the Goblin King battle. I was like, why are there orc structures in there? But this is the second set is the big one. It's the Goblin King battle. Again, we were wondering, who is this Goblin King? Is this the same character as the Great Goblin? Because you said, Inge, that he's never called the Goblin King.
No, he's called the Great Goblin. And I also think that's a reflection of goblin society, if there is any, because mm-hmm. a king there are kings in for example Gondor and Rohan, so that's kind of has a complete court around it, so it's kind of high sophisticated mm-hmm. kind of organization, and orcs are very chaotic. They don't have permanent residence. They are not very smart. So I was always mildly confused and also mm-hmm. Surprised that there would be a goblin king, because I don't think goblins have such a matter of sophistication that they would have something like a king.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it could be, of course, just a name.
It would be PR language, but
yes,
I kind of hope that they don't call him the Goblin King in the movies, because that would be kind of lore breaking.
On the IMDb listing of actors and roles, he's just called the Great Goblin. So
yeah.
I guess they stick with the canon denomination for a name for him. So I don't know what this battle is, the Goblin King battle.
I think that's the battle where they
captured the dwarves, right?
Where they captured the dwarves and
right. And Gandalf is there in the Lego set, so and he's
yeah, it's because the back wall of the cave they yeah. seek shelter in collapses and it pours out goblins and
right.
they capture or the dwarves, and then Gandalf comes in and then mm-hmm. detonates some fireworks and or all kinds of light effects.
Yeah,
and that creates major confusion, which allows the company to escape in the tunnels.
Right, right.
And well, that's how Bilbo stumbles upon Gollum.
The set looks great. Lots of Lego skulls and a big throne, and some of the dwarves as well. And some Lego goblins, and there is a big monster orc or whatever it is, and it looks just fantastic. The controversy, however, is about this Escape from Mirkwood Spiders, which is a small set. The big controversy is that in this Lego set, you have both a little Lego puppet of Legolas and one of Toriel. Whereas we know that it's actually Bilbo who saves them from the spiders. I mean, that's why he needed Sting, right?
And yeah, he slips on the ring and then cuts loose all the dwarves who are...
Fans are outraged about this because it's like, come on, don't bring the elves. The elves hate the dwarves. Why would the elves free the dwarves from the spiders? That is stupid. However, I'm...
Especially the elves in Lorien and Mirkwood have no business with dwarves whatsoever. So it doesn't make sense at all.
What I'm thinking
for them to be...
I think that what could happen is that we don't know much about the role of Legolas and Toriel. We do know from the description, you know, the German description that we talked about recently in the previous episodes. We do know that they're setting up Legolas as being like kind of in conflict, whether to stand with his father or to, you know, take another, make other choices. And so that could be a way in which they kind of integrate that perhaps Legolas wants to help the dwarves in this situation. And it could still be Bilbo who saves the day. It's just a matter of how you tell this. Perhaps Legolas is not able to do this alone. So I don't know.
The problem is, why would Legolas, what's the motive of Legolas to help dwarves?
Well, he might actually be aware of that there's a bigger picture here, and that these dwarves and this hobbit have something... have a bigger purpose than that. So I think that's actually interesting that Legolas would have the intuition that he needs to do something because these dwarves and this hobbit are important for a bigger purpose. So it's almost like he's got this this intuition of the what will happen in Lord of the Rings. And then Toriel might be the counterpart of that, who's very loyal to the Elven King and might try to stop him from intervening. And perhaps she is successful, and that's why Bilbo needs to save the day. I'm not that upset. And then another possibility, although I think it's a small possibility, is that sometimes my nephews have Lego sets like this of the Star Wars franchise and whatnot. And they sometimes just put in other characters, whereas you know that in the movie they're not in that scene. They're not part of that story. But it's because kids just like to make up their own stories. And so that's why they put them in. I don't know. They're many ways, but it's sparking a lot of interesting discussions online. And then finally, two more Lego sets. There is a big one that is called the Attack of the Wargs. So you see a gray and a white warg, and then a tree and some fire elements. So this is the well-known story of the, you know, the trees that are set, that are burning, and then
yeah, and they have to rescue by the eagles.
Yeah, they have to jump into the tree, and this tree looks big enough to be a safe harbor for the dwarves. And then the final one is a beautiful set as well, called the Barrel Escape, and it has two barrels, and then, you know, it just looks very nice. It also has a little prison, so that's probably part of that, you know, the imprisonment of Bilbo's company. Looks awesome. And a lot of other toys also gave away major spoilers for the movie trilogy. Unfortunately, we're running out of time, so we will have to save that for the next episode of Secrets of the Hobbit. In the meantime, hope you enjoyed this first part of our effort to catch up with the news. We will hope that Dave Kale can join us soon for more commentary. And, well, we've got some... Let me just... lift the tip of the of what we're going to talk about next the next episode. There is news about the end title song. We know who's going to sing it, and it's not a woman, which is awesome. Well, would be fine if it was a woman, but we've had three movies with women, and so now we've got a guy who sings the song. So brings balance to the universe. And then there is news about the duration of the movie. We have a definitive information about how long this movie is going to be. You're not going to be disappointed. And there are new pictures of Thranduil and Legolas. We've got an interview with Hugo Weaving about The Hobbit with some interesting comments. And there are some more stills that leaked out with also totally new material. All that is coming up soon in our future episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit. Thanks for listening to this one. If you have some time, leave us a comment. If you have any extra information or thoughts about what we talk about, go over to our blog at thehobbit.sqpn.com. That would be thehobbit.sqpn.com. And we always love to read your comments, feedback, suggestions for the show. And we thank you so much for your participation. Spread the word. If you know any Hobbit fans, or, you know, people are now starting to warm them up to this upcoming movie, tell them that there is a podcast that follows the final preparations for the premiere of the first movie very, very closely. Also, check out Middle Earth Network Radio with, of course, Dave Kale at the helm. Also, lots of great podcasts there with the Tolkien Professor. And we will hopefully meet you soon in the next episode, where we will continue to catch up with the news about The Hobbit. Thanks for listening. And, well, may the hair on your feet, etc., etc.,
grow ever longer.
Grow ever longer. Bye-bye now, and thanks, Inge.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.